This is NCR, National Corporate Radio News, our news for you. Stay tuned for a special NCR presentation where you'll get an up-close and genuinely horrifying look at Vice President Dick Cheney, the man who really runs America.
This is an NCR special presentation, Dick Cheney, an exercise in frustration. Join us tonight as we examine the life of Vice President Dick Cheney, a passionate, scowling, merciless public servant with a sincere interest in keeping torture safe and legal. How did he become the man he is today? How many hearts has he eaten? And how many heart attacks has he had? Does he have a heart at all, or is he a creepy robot? Tonight, we'll examine those questions, plus some others that might actually be important.
We begin with Dick Cheney's birth, though even that date is in dispute. While the official story is that Marjorie Cheney gave birth to a boy named Richard Caligula Cheney on January 30th, 1941 in Casper, Wyoming, the more likely story is that Mr. Cheney was invoked from the spirit underworld about 5,000 years ago as part of a human sacrifice ceremony to the god Osiris atop the Giza Pyramid in beautiful downtown Egypt. But to hear Dick's mom tell it, Mr. Cheney was born of frustration. In this rare interview she did for Entertainment Tonight in 1962, Marjorie Cheney describes events in her life in the lead-up to Dick's birth.
Dick's father and I were frustrated with our own lives at the time and our marriage. So we thought having a child would be a really great way to stop hating each other so much. Turns out we were wrong. Our frustration with our lives was only just beginning.
Dick Cheney, who is actually Dick Cheney VII, just another Dick in a long line of Dicks, remains the only known human being to be born with a grumble. Listen to this rare wax cylinder recording of a five-month-old Dick Cheney crying as he scowls, recorded by Dick Cheney's father, Dick, a wax cylinder enthusiast.
Wah. Wah.
Aw, is my little Dickster hungry?
Wah, wah.
You want your blankie?
No, I said wah. Doesn't anyone understand why around here? Damn it.
It's also worth noting that in this recording, we hear the infant Cheney starting to form words and his signature vitriolic tone, a tone that would distinguish him for the rest of his life as a bitter, frustrated man.
Even in Cheney's years as a young boy, he learned the value of frowning, muttering, and cursing to get what he wanted. But that wasn't enough for the ambitious boy from Wyoming. It was in these formative years, when Dick was still dick high to a grasshopper, that he developed a concept many of us now take for granted as a staple of American foreign policy, the preemptive strike. Mr. Cheney's younger brother, Bob, arguably the world's first recipient of the preemptive strike, explains.
He used to be. If I messed with Dick's toys, I'd get the swirly, which meant that he'd cram my head into the toilet and flush it. Of course, later in life, he'd advocate doing this to detainees, but I guess that's another story. But after a while, Dick would start observing my habits, and he'd put together a dossier that would explain how I was planning to mess with his toys. Then he'd give me the preemptive swirly. Now, I can honestly say that most of the time, I had no intention of messing with his toys at all. But I suppose Dick has another story.
When asked about the preemptive swirlies waged against his little brother, the vice president does indeed have another story.
Bob's a liar. You can't trust a man like him, who is my brother, and has no credibility. Look, I can prove beyond a shadow of a doubt that every one of those swirlies averted a toy disaster that surely would have come had Bob not had his head shoved into my parents' toilet. I think we can say with some certainty now that the world is a safer place thanks to all the swirlies Bob received. From me.
In school, the young Dick Cheney was an ambitious student, highly competitive in sports and in the classroom. But Dick had little patience for failure. Dick played Pop Warner football, and he was a standout performer on the field. But his vindictive behavior towards teammates that failed to deliver for him was a cause for concern with the team's coach, Harvey Breastman. Breastman told young Dick not to be too demanding of his peers and to stop asking that they be sent to indefinite detention for failing to catch a pass. Fortunately, his favorite teacher in grade school, Miss Duffield, taught him not to accept anything but the best. Here's an excerpt from an interview I conducted with Miss Duffield at an insane asylum in Bedlam, Missouri. Miss Duffield, may I call you Miss?
Oh, Missy's fine.
Okay, Missy. What did you tell your student Dick Cheney when he told you of his frustration with the incompetence of his peers?
I told him just what my father told me, that some people are inferior. They have inferior genes, you know, and that life is just too short to suffer fools gladly. If you have to deal with these people, you should at least punish them, or try to round them up and keep them separate from clean people. But if possible, you should have them exterminated, or just kill them yourself.
I see, and your father was...
Hitler.
Right. While we may never know if Missy really is Hitler's daughter, we can conclusively say that she is insane.
By the age of 10, Dick Cheney realized that he was destined for greatness, and that his journey towards global domination would be perilous and fraught with enemies. To that end, the little Dick decided in the fifth grade that he needed to retain legal counsel. Here's attorney Jeff Scooter Phibby recounting how he became the vice president's first lawyer.
I was in law school at the time, trying to figure out how I was going to pay off my massive student loans, when in comes this 10-year-old kid telling me about a smear campaign he wants to run against a popular guy at his grade school, and how he'll need plausible deniability. Of course, my first inclination was to laugh and tell the kid to take a hike, but when he offered to pay off half my debt, well, I'd have been a fool to say no. Where that money came from, I'll never know, but if you're listening, Dick, I'd like to say once again, thanks for college, buddy.
By the time young Dick graduated from grade school, he'd already plotted a trajectory for his rise to power, and even had his eye on Middle Eastern oil wealth. But adolescence was about to frustrate his plans once again.
That's coming right up. But first, let's listen to an interview Dick Cheney did with Ted Koppel on ABC's Nightline, recorded in mid-July of 2001.
We're joined tonight here in the studio by Vice President Dick Cheney. I'd like to thank you, Mr. Vice President, for taking the time to appear on Nightline.
Yeah, the pleasure's all mine, of course.
So, Mr. Vice President, many people are saying now that they don't feel too confident about the proposed missile defense program. Test firings have met with little success. How do you intend to address all of these critics?
Well, everybody needs missile defense, obviously.
So you're saying that whether the system works or not, and you're ready to go forward with it.
That's not what I said, Ted. The missile defense program provides powerful defense, in which nations are rogue in the nature of their defensive offense complex. We have to stop terrorists, Ted.
Now, I imagine most people would agree terrorists have to be stopped, but Mr. Vice President, how will this system stop terrorists if it can't be shown to stop, well, anything at all?
You really are a piece of work, aren't you, Mr. Koppel? I ought to kick your fucking little...
New topic. Failing schools. What does the administration plan to do about them?
Let me tell you something. Failing schools mean vouchers, plain and simple. We can't leave any child behind. Especially those gifted children might take to the sciences. Rocket propulsion, shrapnel design, projectile force torsion control... And as how that might impact large crowds.
You mean the large crowds in the failing schools?
Precisely. Any more questions?
As we all know, the baby boom generation is on the road to retirement, and this will put a heavy burden on the current Medicaid prescription drug care system. How do you intend to pay for it?
I intend to pay for it by making all those elderly... Suck my dick! You goddamn fuckers, they can rot in my shit! If I could strangle every one of them, I would. I would, Ted. I would. But in the meanwhile, I think cutting school funding ought to do it. Fuckers.
Maybe we ought to take a break.
Come on, Ted. Don't get coy with me. You know what I'm talking about. It's us against them, buddy. Mano a mano. Comprende, brother? We don't mow a few down now. They breed like rats. All those people... Fuck! Have you ever been to a public lavatory, Ted? Savages! Why do people have to make things so dirty? Why can't everything just be like Montana? Just pretty, you know? Real fucking pretty! Pretty, god damn it.
I think it's time to take him back to the White House. So Neil Jenkins, why don't you get him out of here? Then?
You goddamn hippie! I'll fucking kill you! I'll kick your ass and take your gas! You eat my shit, you fucker! Goddamn!
That's our report for tonight. So fucked up, it must be true. Good night.
You're tuned in to a National Corporate Radio special presentation, Dick Cheney, An Exercise in Frustration. And I'm Ann Bazeau. Dick Cheney entered high school ready to begin his big rise to greatness. But a tremendous distraction soon availed itself. Her name was Lynn Vincent, the Mustang queen and town harlot who would later become his wife. A classmate, Teddy Pendergrass, no relation, remembers Lynn fondly.
She slept with everyone. That's a large part of why she got voted most popular girl in high school. She had a lot of people behind her. Now, Dick wanted the best in everything, but I think in this case, he kind of got popular mixed up with best. Anyway, she screwed him up pretty good.
Before long, Dick and Lynn were having sex. A lot of sex. Picture it. It's terrible. And soon after that came the booze and smack. In less than a year, Cheney had transformed from an ambitious megalomaniac to a drug-addled, babbling, and useless megalomaniac. And what's worse, Lynn Vincent had convinced him that he was the greatest artist that ever lived.
It's a story that's been kept secret for decades now, and to this day the White House refuses to acknowledge that the official story is crap. But take it from us, our crap is true. An investigative reporter, Seymour Butts, confirms our bullshit.
The official story has it that he was a captain of the football team, grade A All-American boy. But everyone who knew him at the time can tell you that's malarkey. For Christ's sakes, Dick was for several years the principal supplier of Afghan gold to Lenny Bruce. And Lynn was Lenny's favorite coke whore. Why do you think Dick flunked out of Yale? Twice. They didn't suppress that part of the story, but ask the White House why, and what do? Lie right to your face. What a bunch of lame-os.
By the age of 22, Dick and Lynn were married, beatnik idiots, smoking the reefer, snapping their fingers instead of clapping, and losing their keys in the toilet. But fortunately for them, these newlyweds' pre-psychedelic bliss was interrupted by a visit from none other than Satan himself. In a rare interview with NCR, Old Scratch describes the conversation he had with an uncharacteristically long-haired and jovial future vice president.
I said to Dick, man, you let me down. I told him that I needed his help spread Neil all over the world, not just to Country Joe and the Fish fans. Cheney gave me some line about how he could control the whole world in his paintings and poems, but I told Dick I already have people for that. Andy Warhol, Jackson Pollock, Shel Silverstein. I expected more out of him, because I'll tell you what, that motherfucker's evil. Hell, he's even evil by my standards. I'd watch my back around that dick. And I'm the fucking devil, man. Long story short, he signed over his soul, and I'll tell you one thing. As soon as that next heart attack comes, let's just say hell's gonna get noticeably hotter. I'm looking forward to it.
Coming up next, Dick and Lynn clean up their act for Satan and get their revenge on the hippies while they close in on the Citadel of Power. But let's fast forward for a moment to an NCR story from 2002, when Vice President Cheney received the vaunted Architect of Peace Award. Vice President Dick Cheney smiled with hate and conceit today as he received the incredibly ironic Architect of Peace Award at the Richard Nixon Library in Yorba Linda, California. NCR's Mara Rightwing has more.
Vice President Dick Cheney's robot heart was filled with pride and joy as he accepted the much-deserved Peace Award at the Nixon Library. Mr. Cheney chuckled to himself as he thanked America for finally waking up and honoring the real hero in the war against terror, himself.
I've been waiting for years for an honor like this, and frankly, I deserve it. And now that the Pentagon is finished being rebuilt, it has been renamed the Dick Cheney Memorial Ministry of Peace.
Mr. Cheney then thanked all the friendly dictators who played their part so well in what he called this charade of patriotism. The winners know who they are. Just after this dick-lifting, inspiring speech, a sour note was struck by an ugly and terrible protester at today's festivities.
Mr. Cheney, how do you respond to allegations that between Desert Storm and the so-called War on Terror, you've killed more Arabs than the Crusades?
The brave and resilient Mr. Cheney responded appropriately and in kind.
Oh, yeah? So you think you're more peaceful than me? Well, who's got the Peace Award, huh? Why don't you come up here and try and take it from me, Peace Boy? Then we'll see who's the goddamn Prince of Peace.
But as stupid as it may seem, this demonstrator continued to taunt the Vice President.
Mr. Cheney, when the President said he'd start cracking down on corporate criminals, Why didn't he just start with you?
That's when this young man finally got what he deserved.
Why, you little terrorist! You bring shame to the Nixon Library! I'll show you the true meaning of peace, you jippy! Take that! Take it! Get peace! Peace!
The second in command made good on his promise as he stabbed this terrorist protester to death with a 12-inch serrated knife and ate his heart while it was still beating in the name of Homeland Defense.
Ah, peace.
Now who run Barter Town? Mara Rightwing, NCR News.
This is a National Corporate Radio special presentation, Dick Cheney, An Exercise in Frustration. I'm no angel. After his life-changing conversation with the devil, Dick Cheney realized that his destiny wasn't to create little worlds of his own with his terrible art, but rather to control our world with his incomparable rage. Despite his lack of a degree from Yale, Cheney quickly found other ways to make himself attractive to power brokers in Washington, D.C. He began by working undercover as a hippie infiltrator for Republican Congressman William Steiger. Cheney soon proved himself amazingly effective at ruining the fun for the very people he'd partied with just a few years before. Here's Dippy McBusted, one of hundreds of counterculture fools double-crossed by the Dick. Dippy explains how the Dick shafted her.
Oh man, I thought the old Dickster was one cool cat, man. A slick hipster with groovy threads and a sweet tooth for the pale horse, man.
Huh?
Oh man, I forgot this is like Squaresville, man. He wore nice clothes and enjoyed heroin.
Oh, great. Go on, Ms. McBusted, in your juvenile lingo.
Okay, man, right. So then, one day, man, Brainy Cheney, man, invites us to this massive, like, bein', you know, man?
No, I don't.
So we're all like, man, that's happening. So, man, like, 100 of us go, and it's like, man, a magic, man, warehouse full of free love and sweet Chiba, and everyone's just like, perceive, man. And then suddenly, kapow, like a man, like an electric sausage milkshake, the man, crashes in like a brown acid flashback, man, and all these groovy cats get hemmed, man, and into the slammer like a peacock in a raincoat, man.
So, you were arrested?
No, man, we were nailed by that turncoat, man, like a squirrel in a vortex.
You were arrested.
Yeah, man, we got arrested. Cheney's infiltration soon caught the attention of Donald Rumsfeld, who at the time was heading up President Nixon's new Office of Ghetto Oppression. Mr. Rumsfeld admired Cheney's ability to lie directly to people who thought they could trust him. He immediately hired him on as his special assistant, if you know what I mean. Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld explains his thinking at the time.
Look, it isn't every day you find someone with the raw guts and blind fury of a man like Dick Cheney. Now add that to a brain like a steel-jawed trap, and I smell victory. Did we have to stop the anti-war movement? Yes. It was killing our ability to give the American people the war they so richly deserved. Did it involve lies, deceit, counterintelligence operations against our own citizens? Sure it did. Do I have any regrets about it? No. Did we feast on the hearts of Vietnamese babies? Aw, nuts. I just asked myself a rhetorical question I don't want to answer. But the point is, Dick Cheney was awesome at ghetto oppression. Too bad he got frustrated so fast.
Dick Cheney didn't feel special enough as a special assistant. He needed more. Much more. And soon he'd get it.
When we come back, Dick Cheney gets into the White House and Congress. But first, let's listen to an excerpt of a secret recording made of a discussion between Dick Cheney, then National Security Advisor Condoleezza Rice, British Defense Minister Jack Straw, and Tony Blair in London in the lead-up to the war in Iraq. The conversation begins with Condoleezza addressing one of Blair's concerns.
Fine. If you need a song and dance for your people, we don't care. It's gonna be a problem, though, when we get there and there are no WMDs. A lot of people will accuse us of the old bait and switch.
Yeah, fortunately, Condi, I have a ready-made solution for that problem. Fuck 'em.
Yes, I agree. Prime Minister, thoughts? Feelings?
We're bloody doomed.
Wrong! You're the only one doomed if you don't get on board. Look, what's getting your limey panties in a knot here? Is it elections? Is that what it is, Tony? Just commit your troops, T-Man. You put them on the ground and you could put your feet up and coast as long as you like. We'll take care of your little election for you.
You could do that for me?
Hey, does the word Florida mean anything to you, Mr. Blair?
Oh, right. Oh, well, jolly good, that, yes.
But what, you goat fucking cheese eater? God.
No, Mr. Vice President, be careful. Your robot heart just can't take this level of excitement.
I know. Everything was just going fine until this slimy prick started pissing me off.
Do you see what you're doing, Prime Minister? With your hand wringing and your fussing, you're murdering him. You're killing our second in command.
Good Christ, I am sorry.
Need war. Must have. That fucking war.
There, Dick. Okay, how about this? Add the WMD thing that somehow or other... Saddam Hussein's been working with Osama bin Laden and Al-Qaeda, and he's harboring someone who looks like the guy or the one guy who might be in Al-Qaeda. Well, that'd be enough to get you Brits hungry for blood, right?
Well, they do like Agus.
Yeah.
Shut up, Jack.
Right.
Saddam Hussein helped Osama bin Laden. Yes, that does sound good, but,
Wait a minute! Bloody hell, it does! Mr. Prime Minister, Osama bin Laden hates Saddam Hussein. And Hussein hates bin Laden. No one will believe this doggerel.
Ah, but that assumes anyone's been paying any attention to anything. And with all due respect, I think the average British subject spends far more time following reality television shows than learning about how one evil foreigner feels about another evil foreigner. Ms. Rice is right. We'll call them allies and be done with it.
So you're on board, then? And finally done being a fucking coward?
Yes, I am finally done being a fucking coward.
Great! Let's drink some fucking scotch. Jolly good. Jolly good.
Clink. That was an excerpt of an audio recording made at 10 Downing Street in London, the residence of Prime Minister Tony Blair and the seat of British power. The recording was made in July of 2002 and seems to implicate the heads of state of both the United Kingdom and the United States in a conspiracy to take both of our nations to war for a lie. But since we had the piss scared out of us here at NCR for emitting so much as a whiff of liberal bias, we'll leave the obvious conclusion to you. This is a National Corporate Radio's special presentation, Dick Cheney, an exercise in frustration. I'm no angel. After his stint as Donald Rumsfeld's special assistant, Cheney was emboldened, but frustrated nonetheless. His wife, Lynn Cheney, recalls the frustration Dick experienced at the time.
I remember he was constantly scowling and muttering and pouting, and, well, for him that's nothing out of the ordinary, in bed. But then there was the heart attack, and after that he got the robot heart installed. I kind of thought it might be time to communicate with him. I asked him, Dick, you stupid asshole, why are you letting me down? And that's when I realized that his lust for power was far greater than I had ever imagined. So we worked it.
And work it they did. With his new robot heart whirring wildly, Cheney landed an enviable job. Chief of Staff to President Ford. Finally, Cheney was right at the center of power in the known universe, and only one carefully conceived coup away from seizing the reins of power himself until the unthinkable happened. Ford lost the election to a sissy man named Jimmy Carter. Cheney was devastated.
For more than a decade after this crushing blow, Cheney had to settle for slumming it in the House of Representatives as the gentleman from Wyoming. A humiliating, frustrating period for the Big Dick, enlivened only by the opportunity to cast a vote against heroic black man Nelson Mandela. But in 1988, a new opportunity would soon avail itself to Prickly Dick, and he'd seize on it like a lion chewing up a Christian. George Herbert Walker Bush won the White House that year, and for one of his top cabinet positions, Bush was going to need a dick. At last, Cheney was taking a post where he could share his seething frustration in an intimate way with millions of strangers. Dick Cheney was nominated to be the Secretary of Defense. Bush the Elder describes his experience with his secretary.
Yeah, at first he loved it, of course, and I was happy to have him on. But he quickly got bored, you know, frustrated, and frankly, so did I. The Soviets are collapsing, Cold War's coming to an end. What the hell are we going to do to keep ourselves entertained? I threw him a bone with that Panama thing, but that was over in, what, a week? 3 days? Barely over 2,000 killed, and we're moving on. Cheney wanted something you could really sink his teeth into, so when the suggestion to do Iraq came up, of course we jumped at the chance. Who wouldn't?
Well, a human being?
Right. A thinking, compassionate, warm-hearted human being. But that wasn't us. I mean, Dick's got that robot heart, and I'm a reptilian sucking your species dry. Well, I suppose that's another story. So anyway, we did Iraq.
And how? Saddam Hussein took the Bush bait in 1990, and Cheney relished the chance to finally make everyone feel the frustration that had dogged him his entire life. The first Gulf War finally made Cheney the quarterback of a team guaranteed to kick ass, like the Pittsburgh Steelers playing against your mom. Cheney made no effort whatsoever to restrain his awesome fury, unloading chemical weapons, depleted uranium shells, and more explosive power than World War II on an army that didn't even fight back. For the first time in his life, Dick Cheney didn't feel frustrated. He felt good. But it was a feeling Dick would not relish. Here's Cheney himself speaking to the topic in an interview with Bob Costas in 1994.
How did it feel, Dick, to see victory in Iraq for our boys? Did it smell like a rose?
Bob, I don't appreciate your candy-ass metaphor, but the answer is yes. Only problem is, once the American people stopped thinking about war and turned their attention back to domestic issues, they got soft and complacent, like a bunch of socialists eating ho-hos. War has a way of keeping people focused on what's important, like ruling over others, and me ruling you. I vowed after Bush the Softy Sr. got turned out of office by a treasonous Democrat in 94 that if I ever return to the White House, and I fucking will, this mistake will not be repeated. It'll be all war all the time, Bob, no matter what you and your Hollywood friends might prefer.
Jeez, Dick, that sounds kind of harsh.
Harsh? You want to see harsh, you whiny little man? You're a sports announcer, for Christ's sake. You don't know harsh. You've never been in the shit.
Well, actually, neither of you. How many draft affirmations did you get? Like, five?
How dare you use facts against me? I'm gonna kill you! Medic!
It was at that moment that Dick Cheney suffered his fifth heart attack. Oh yeah, we forgot to mention those other three. Who cares?
When we come back, a disillusioned Dick Cheney solidifies his base, Big Oil, and then sweeps back into power for the ultimate exercise in frustration. But let's take a moment to enjoy another one of Dick Cheney's heart attacks. This one is from just last year in the vice presidential debate with liberal sissy man John Edwards. We begin with Senator Edwards' opening remarks.
Look, you can say a lot of things about me, and you're not going to hurt my feelings. I've heard it all before. You're a parasitic trial lawyer. You're a snooty liberal. You have a small penis. You look like a baby orangutan that's retarded and covered with shit. And all that might be true. But even if I were a baby orangutan trial lawyer that's retarded and covered with shit and has a small, snooty liberal penis, that'd still be like sweet potatoes next to this shady, creepy overlord of darkness, corruption, and hate that they call Dick Cheney. I mean, look at this guy sharing the stage with me right now. Just take a good look at him. Is that not the creepiest man you've seen all week? Look, he can't stop sneering no matter how hard he tries, because he's just fucking evil, man. This robot-hearted son of a bitch says he can't be bothered to explain to you what happened at them secret energy task force meetings, meetings you paid for with your tax dollars. You want to know why I won't tell you? Because he used those meetings to decide how he and his pals are going to divvy up control of the whole fucking world. It's only one thing this old bastard wants. It's the same thing the devil wants for those of you who read your Bible. World domination. All right, I'm done with you, Grandpa.
Would you like to respond to that, Mr. Vice President?
I certainly would. First of all, I've had about enough of it with the cracks about my robot heart. For the record, it is only partially robotic. The other part is a perfectly natural heart from a Taiwanese laborer who is no longer meeting his quota at the factory. And thus, he was obviously not putting his heart to good use. So anyone who calls me heartless ought to keep that in mind. Now, to the subject of the Energy Task Force meetings that you will never be allowed to know about ever. Of course, it comes with a pang of regret that I would have to conceal any information from the American people, whom I love dearly. But the fact is, you people are way too stupid to even understand what we were doing behind those reinforced steel doors. So to give you the information would be like throwing it away. No offense. Besides, if anyone ever catches me, I'm only one heartbeat away from the big button. And you know I'd do it. And then, the terrorists win. So what does all this mean? It means that my opponent can stand up here and he can challenge me on this or that point, And occasionally he might even be right. But if you think for one second that me and my boy W are leaving this November, you better have your head examined. We're not going anywhere! So shut up and get used to it. And should it turn out by some miracle that we go down, we're taking every last one of you with us. Think about that when you go to the polls November 2nd. Thank you.
After these cordial remarks, the debate really started to heat up. Let's take a listen to this pointed exchange between the Vice President and the photogenic Senator.
Mr. Vice President, why is it exactly that the terrorists will win if your opponent is elected?
For fuck's sake, isn't it obvious? This man has no balls! He is a sissy child in a world of men, and I won't have it.
Hey, old man. You think your balls are so goddamn huge? Why don't you come on over to John John and see what's swinging?
How dare you speak about yourself in the third person in my presence?
Excuse me, boys, you're not supposed to be addressing each other. I'm the moderator here.
Back off, lady. This is some man bullshit. All right, you little terrorist. You asked for the dick, and now you're gonna get some dick.
Well, bring it on, then.
That line belongs to the president, you little creep. Nobody goes stealing my president's lines.
Oh, yeah? Well, let's roll.
You dirty fucking savage! I swear to fucking God and all that is high and holy that I will barbecue your candy ass on the grill of Arnold's SUV. Come here, you little monster.
Nope. Oh, no, close. You're making progress. But hey, this is hard work.
Stop it! I'll kill you! I will fucking kill you! I'll kill you! Oh, God damn it! Medic! Medic!
At that point, the network had to cut to an unprecedented commercial break while the Vice President's medical team worked frantically to save the nation's second-in-command. But within just a couple minutes, Cheney brushed off his latest heart attack and was ready to go. Perhaps it softened him a bit as the Vice President showed us his kinder, gentler side in his closing remarks. Let's listen to a few of those remarks now.
I'd like to say that I'm sorry about my little outburst earlier. I'd like to say that... But I'm not sorry, so let's just drop it and move on. Look, I'm not a greedy man or a creepy robot or a vampire. I'm a really nice, regular guy. And as long as you can avoid moving or fidgeting or looking at me directly or speaking in my presence or asking anything of me ever, you will find that I am somewhat tolerable and more or less capable of controlling my rage. And that is why you should vote for me this November. Re-elect me, and nobody gets hurt. Just don't try any funny stuff. I see you.
Mr. Edwards, your closing remarks?
No, he doesn't get any. He doesn't deserve it. I'll kill you. I'll kill you all. Ah!
This is an NCR special presentation, Dick Cheney, an exercise in frustration. I'm no angel. With his tenure at Halliburton, Mr. Cheney found a new and arguably even more direct way of tapping into power through oil. But again, Cheney was frustrated, as usual, again. And he thirsted for the absolute kind of control that only the presidency itself could provide. Fortunately for him, a governor from Texas with a familiar name was about to throw his hat in the ring for the nation's highest office, and Dick saw in him the chance of a lifetime. Cheney quickly latched on to his former president's son, George W. Dumbass Bush, like a leech to a trash bag full of blood. Presidential advisor and confidant Karen Hughes recalls her experience with the blood-sucking Dick.
He was kind of creepy, you know, like a vampire. But I happen to like vampire movies, and Dick reminds me of my dad, who is also creepy. Now some other people were surprised when Dick became head of the Vice Presidential Search Committee, only to select himself as the candidate. But that came to no surprise as me. That's just how he operates, connivingly. It made me feel like a little girl.
Though few understood at the time what he was really doing, Cheney had no intention of being the typical vice president. Dick had known George W. Bush since George was young, and Dick knew precisely what he could do with him. Cram his hand up that presidential ass and use the little Bush as his own personal puppet. The only obstacle left between Dick and absolute power was managing to get elected. But Dick wasn't about to let a little thing like democracy get in the way. With a cadre of lawyers, a friendly Supreme Court, and a compliant media, Cheney smashed his way into the White House faster than you can say Broward County hand recount, which, of course, you never got to say because it wasn't allowed to happen. And with that fateful election, or selection, Cheney finally ascended to a position of ultimate power and shared the gift of frustration with a world wholly unprepared for it. Here again is Secretary of Defense Rumsfeld.
It was so great, you know. It was just so fucking great to see my old protege busting down the doors and just getting in there any way he could, like Rommel leading a blitzkrieg. Well, sort of like that, only not as German. But the problem we had then was the same problem we had before. How are we going to get our war on? Lucky for us, the Clinton administration gave us a hot tip on their way out, suckers.
In the transition from the Clinton administration to the Bush regime, outgoing National Security Advisor Sandy Berger warned his counterpart of the serious, imminent threat posed by a then-obscure organization called Al-Qaeda. When Dick Cheney learned of this group, he quickly realized what he had to do. Nothing. Nothing at all, but sit back and wait. And on that fateful day in September of 2001, Dick's patience paid off. Big time. Al-Qaeda succeeded in launching the most devastating attack ever to hit American soil, and Dick Cheney got the greatest gift he could ever ask for. Carte blanche from the American people to visit frustration upon all the world forever, under the rubric of a new global war on terror.
When we come back, we'll see how Dick's greatest success becomes his worst frustration, and what that means for your stock portfolio. But let's take a moment to listen to an NCR exclusive interview with the Vice President recorded in the spring of 2004.
Many Americans are still shocked and awed by the Vice President's use of colorful language on the Senate floor last Thursday. By colorful language, of course, we mean go fuck yourself. Those three little words that changed the tone in Washington forever, for now. But there is still some dispute as to exactly what was said in that sidebar debate, and joining us now to clarify is the Vice President himself. Thanks for speaking with us today, Mr. Vice President.
Go fuck yourself, Noah.
I certainly will. I'd like to begin by throwing you a complete softball and give you an opportunity to speak about the positive story in Iraq that everyone is missing.
Well, look what we've done already. Saddam's in jail. His sons are dead. His government's gone. We've propped up an interim government there in its place, and soon, everywhere America goes will look just like that. Everyone will be dead or in jail, and we'll be propping up a new regime of freedom.
Right.
So we're heading in the right direction, and it's important for us to get the fucking job done. We don't want these countries to revert back to the way they were before we took over.
And I think everyone is glad to see Saddam gone. Now let's discuss your, shall we say, tone change that you brought to the Senate last week. How would you characterize your remarks to the Democratic senator from Vermont?
Well, I guess you could say we had a little fucking debate in the United States Senate. I expressed myself rather forcefully. Felt better after I had done it. Like when you take a good shit.
I see. Did you use the F word?
That's not the kind of language I usually use.
All right, because the reports were that you did.
Yes, that's not the kind of language I ordinarily fucking use, but...
What did you tell him?
I expressed my dissatisfaction for Senator Leahy. In a fucking colorful way.
Over his comments about you and Halliburton?
Over his dead body. No, it was partly that. It was partly... Also, he is the kind of individual who will make those kinds of charges and then try to fuck you as though he's your best friend. And I expressed, in no uncertain terms, my views of his conduct and walked away.
His conduct? But isn't it you who told him to go fuck himself?
Probably.
Do you have any regrets?
No. I said it, and I felt it, like I would feel a fine Turkish whore.
So let me understand, then. He comes up, he sees you, and shakes your hand. And then what do? Lay into him?
No. No, I explained my unhappiness with the way he conducted himself. Part of the problem here is that instead of having a substantive debate over important policy issues, he had challenged my integrity. And I don't like that. And then he wants to act like, you know, everything's peaches and cream. That's when I knew it was time to give him some of the fuck.
All right. Now, they say you broke decorum for a senator congressional session. Technically, I guess it wasn't in session.
No, we weren't in session. What we were doing was waiting to take our pictures, our official Senate photo. And I go up and sit in the chair as the president of the goddamn fucking Senate. Doesn't anybody fucking care about the rules anymore? You can ask me questions when I fucking tell you to.
Pretty feisty guy, aren't you?
Well, I'm usually fairly calm. But with you fucking cockknockers in the press, I can't get a moment's peace.
Oh, well, pardon me. I'd hate for NCR to lose its press credentials. Let's talk about some good news for you. The Supreme Court recently, as you know, refused to force you to open up the Energy Task Force records. Is that a victory, or is it just a matter of time before you will have to reveal them?
Everybody thinks I'm, you know, into secrets. But there's a very important principle involved here, Noah. And that is that the President of the United States and the Vice President need to be able to tell people to go fuck themselves anytime they want.
Mr. Vice President, how are you feeling?
Very good. Well behaved.
Have you changed your diet?
No. I watch it. Carefully. I make sure that no one can poison me. I only eat raw meat that I have killed with my own hands. Got an exercise room full of equipment and guns up at the house. I'm 63 years old and have a robot heart, so you have to be moderate in your behavior.
You're one heartbeat away from being President of the United States. Are you seriously not interested in running for president?
I have no desire or aspiration to run for anything else. I'm here to serve my country, and I don't have any other agenda that the American people need to know about. It's been a remarkable 4 years when you think about all the different ways we fucked this nation and the world, and I wouldn't have missed it for anything. Even the opportunity to eat Iraqi babies. But it will end in January of 2009 when we declare our successors forever, and I leave this world for the next one that I will rule for all eternity.
Great. Mr. Vice President, a real pleasure. Fuck you very much.
Go fuck yourself, you goddamn hippie.
Fuck you, sir. That was Vice President Dick Cheney speaking to us on a secure line from his spaceship.
And we're back. This is an NCR special presentation, Dick Cheney, A Portrait in Frustration, and I'm Anne Bazot. Within hours of the September 11th attack, several intelligence sources confirmed that Osama bin Laden and his loosely affiliated terror network Al-Qaeda were the responsible parties. But Cheney didn't like this target very much. After all, what could Al-Qaeda offer him other than their lives if he went to the trouble of hunting them down? Cheney decided that it really didn't matter if it made sense or not. The real target was going to be Iraq. Former counterterrorism czar and embittered white man Richard Clark recounts the discussions in the White House at the time.
They didn't care what the facts were. In fact, they were actively making up their own, just like this show of yours does. And they didn't seem to want to listen to what I had to say.
Have you ever considered that maybe they didn't want to hear it because when you talk, you sound like a pretentious asshole?
You know, you're right. And I guess I could have saved a lot of lives and spared everyone a lot of trouble if I'd only changed my arrogant prick tone. Thanks.
Hmm.
But let's not kid ourselves. Dick Cheney was taking us to war in Iraq, even if 9/11 had only been a flock of geese shitting on a used car lot in Glendale, and Richard Clark had used the sweet dulcimer tones of Liberace on a Sunday morn. Take a moment to imagine that, and then forget about it, as it would have changed nothing. Dick Cheney used the huge groundswell of patriotism and general dipshit hostility that followed 9/11 to his advantage, like a heavy metal guitarist playing a power chord, only not that cool. As we heard in the Downing Street tapes excerpt, Cheney manipulated intelligence deftly, like a snake charmer riffing on an oboe, like a...
No, please. That's enough with the metaphors.
Right. Anyway, we invaded Iraq, and though there were naysayers, everything was more or less going along swimmingly. The Bush-Cheney juggernaut got re-selected in 2004, their hold on power only further consolidated. But that old saw of frustration wasn't done with old Dick, and its latest manifestation would be a little man named Joseph Wilson.
Joe Wilson. Even saying the name makes Vice President Cheney gnash his teeth and sizzle with anger. Joe Wilson! Joe Wilson! Joe Wilson!
Ah, make it stop! I will club that clown like a baby fucking seal!
Joe Wilson, for those of you whose attention span doesn't go past 30 seconds, debunked one of the principal justifications that Dick Cheney used to rally support for the war in Iraq, and in doing so, suffered the wrath of the Bush administration when they decide to go after... Oh, darn it, I'm losing you. Never mind. Joe Wilson, Dick Cheney, no likey. Cheney try crush Joe Wilson, but then Cheney look the bad man.
I love it when you talk like that. And that brings us more or less to the present, if you don't mind skipping a lot of it. A war that once looked popular has now lost the support of all the Democrats and at least some Republicans. A grand jury investigation has already indicted Cheney's other scooter, Lewis Scooter Libby, and threatens to implicate even the vice president himself. And on a personal note, Cheney's approval rating languishes at a dismal 19%. Despite all his best efforts, his schemes to grasp and retain power, his lies, his cheats, his clever deceptions... In spite of everything he tries, Cheney still finds that the more he clutches, the more the empire slips through his fingers. So what does Prickly Dick have to say for himself now? We'll give the last word to the Dick himself from an address he made at the American Enterprise Institute just yesterday.
Now, some people are trying to suggest that I'm not interested in having a healthy debate about the war in Iraq. That's not true. I am. As long as at the end of that debate it remains perfectly clear that nothing is going to change and I am right. We can talk all you want then. See if I give a shit. But when people start to question whether me and my little boy Georgie lied to you or gave you intelligence that wasn't handpicked for you to accept as true, then I have to say that that is irresponsible and reckless. I have had it with you people. You have got some nerve thinking about how you can question me. Me and the toady from Texas are about this close to nuking the whole fucking lot of you, you dirty hippies. Just one more stupid question, and that's it. Just one. We'll get in that spaceship and melt this whole fucking planet into glass with big bombs. One more dumb question. I swear to my Lord Satan, I'll just...
Oh, I'm sorry, sir. What was that last part?
That's fucking it. Fuck you all. God, no. Must get to ship before 10th heart attack. Atrophy muscles. Medic. Medic. Fuck!
And who will die first, Dick Cheney or all life on Earth? You'll have to stay tuned to find out. But for now, the exercise and frustration that is Dick Cheney is far from over.
This has been an NCR special presentation. Dick Cheney, an exercise in frustration. I'm No Angel.
And I'm Ambazo. Thanks for joining us.
Support for NCR comes from Halliburton. Like vultures swooping in to feast on the corpse, Halliburton is there. Contributors also include Merck. Merck, we make the heart medicine that keeps our vice president alive. You're welcome. This is NCR, National Corporate Radio News. Our news for you.